Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Happy Friday to you, Sid.
Thank you, Justin. Happy Friday to you as well.
Folks, you got to understand how wild it feels as a married couple to try to improv some, like, light things that you... We've been talking all day, folks.
Yeah, we've been talking to each other all morning, and so now we're just sort of...
Yeah, continuing to talk to each other, but now we are recording the conversation, and it will be more medical-centric than our usual conversations, but there's still quite a bit of medicine discussed in our house pretty much every day, so.
But you usually aren't willing to engage with me on it because I want to tell you about gross stuff, or sometimes I accidentally casually share a story that is maybe sad or even, like,
say tragic.
Yeah. Or, well, I was going to say almost traumatizing. I feel a little guilty about, because I don't.
A little guilty.
I don't always realize.
Yeah.
Let's not unpack that here. No.
Basically, Sydney takes all of her mental garbage and dumps it on my stoop and then wanders off, not a care in the world, and leaves me to sort through the rubbish.
I've gotten better about that.
Have you?
I think so. I have.
Maybe I have just gotten tougher. I'm harder to shake.
I think I've got better. I have a dear friend in a similar line of work who I can commiserate and share.
Right.
Right. So it's not as bad now.
It's important to find your people,
But this is where I can talk to you about medicine in a non-traumatizing way.
That was the original.
You can laugh.
That was the original subtitle for the podcast. Listen, Sydney talks to you about medicine in a non-traumatizing way.
And Justin can laugh and learn.
Yeah, and Justin can laugh and learn, but it wouldn't fit on the logo.
No. Justin, this is a topic that we created not necessarily for our listeners, but we are also sharing with our listeners.
Yes, that's right. Who do we create it for, Sid?
For the Entomological Society of America, the Eastern Branch.
Yes, they were very, very nice to have us to come talk to them about their favorite topic, which is bugs. I'm assuming it's all their favorite topic. Otherwise, it's a wild career poll, but still.
I don't know. You know, you always assume that about people in science. And, like, it's true about me, right? Like,
right.
I was passionate about... I always say, like, I like the gushy sciences.
The gushy sciences?
The gushy sciences. Physics seems not gushy. It's a more sterile science. Mm-hmm. Chemistry can be somewhere in the middle there. And I feel like biology is the gushiest of sciences. Right?
You know, what science do you think I should have gone into? Like, if I had to have gone into a science, what do you think would have gone well for me? What would have been the best science field for me to go into, do you think?
Well, of the three I just mentioned, I was immediately going to say, like, you love baking and you like, the reason you like baking is because there's very clear, precise instructions. And if you follow them exactly right, you get a predictable outcome. Mm-hmm. That's very chemistry. That's a very chemical approach to things. It was why, like, I liked chemistry. I found it fun, but it wasn't my final. I like the thing in biology, especially when you get into medical science, where there's a little bit of unpredictability. Like, I thought I did everything right, but then, whoa, why did that happen? Chemistry is a lot less like that. Generally speaking, if you do it right, you get the same answer every time.
We were actually looking for sociology. The runner-up was statistics. That's what we're looking for here.
Okay.
It was a trivia question.
I wasn't thinking about those.
It wasn't
sciences.
A thought starter.
You can tell. I'm going to get emails about this.
I think statistics are fascinating.
Well, of course,
and I understand
science.
Them just enough to be dangerous. Like someone who barely understands statistics is actually worse than someone who doesn't understand them at all.
It's funny. Statistics, I think you could argue, is a very dangerous science in that sense.
Yeah.
Because you can manipulate it for evil.
Yes, but who would ever?
But of course,
who would do such a thing?
That is true about all the sciences.
Wah!
Let's talk about bugs.
Yes.
This episode for our entomological friends is about like a greatest hits of bugs in medicine. We're going to talk about some bugs and some illnesses we have discussed previously on the show, but we're focusing on the top 10 most wanted bugs.
Top 10 most wanted bugs. Now,
from a medical standpoint, I'm talking about like their relationship with us humans.
Yes, us people, us folks.
Right. Number one, I'm dispensing with the biggest offender of all because it's the most obvious, and I feel like we've discussed the most thoroughly on the show.
Yes. If there's a villain of Sawbones other than humans, if there's a villain of Sawbones other than people, people are both the protagonist and the villain of Sawbones.
Can I tell you? So like, I wanted to confirm that this was still, I don't know why I thought this would have shifted. The most dangerous animal, the most dangerous when it comes to like,
mosquitoes.
Yeah, mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes.
Right? Like, you worry about sharks because there's movies about them, but there should be movies about mosquitoes because they're scarier.
But harder to make movies about, inarguably.
Jaws would have had a very different feel if it was just one mosquito.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
one big mosquito.
It, yeah.
The size of the mosquito is really not the issue with
No. Any mosquito.
It's almost worse that it's small.
Yeah.
Right?
It would, well, if it was a movie about a mosquito...
The size
that is
of
notable.
Jaws.
I mean, the mosquito has to be notable in some way. Size is a huge differentiator. Maybe it can talk. I don't know. I'm just brainstorming here.
Mosquitoes.
A malicious
kill
mosquito.
The yeah. most humans.
Yes.
They're the worst. By far. If you look at lists, by the way, of the most deadly animals, the savviest out there include humans.
Really?
We're on there.
Yeah, we got to be.
Yeah. So.
But maybe
anyway.
But we almost got a woolly mammoth back. I don't know if you heard about that.
Oh.
So maybe, you know, the us giveth and the us taketh away. Like
are we,
maybe,
wait,
we may
are,
extinct you, but you don't know if you're really cool. Maybe we'll bring you back.
We'll bring you back and then it can become one of the deadly. Is that what you're proposing? Like maybe it'll
yes.
take over and kill more
we
humans?
We need a new number one and it's woolly mammoths. They're back, baby. They're
I'm
everywhere.
Glad, so glad we're focusing on that.
Stanley, woolly mammoth is the new Stanley Cup. Everybody's got to have a woolly mammoth.
Mosquitoes are in a class of their own. They kill around 725,000 humans a year. And they do that not because they bite you, but because they spread disease.
Right.
I feel like that was understood, but yeah. I'll say it anyway. The number one problem is malaria. That's the big offender that is spread by mosquitoes. There are obviously a lot of other mosquito-borne illnesses that contribute to their harm, to their danger they can cause. But malaria is the big reason that mosquitoes are so deadly. Mosquitoes may be responsible for the deaths of half of the humans who have ever lived.
Whoa.
Yes.
What? That's so many. That's yeah. so many people.
I mean, and that's like extrapolating out all the diseases mosquitoes can cause and malaria's impact on society and trying to tease it. I mean, so like, I,
it's
you
like
know,
a
I,
lot.
That's not, but like the point is,
it's a lot.
Mosquitoes are really dangerous. They are so, they have changed, they've dictated the course of human history on multiple occasions. Like you can read, we've talked about it on the show before, but you can go back and read articles about elections and wars and all kinds of human events that were drastically altered by, I mean, largely malaria, but other mosquito-borne illnesses. And they are so deadly to us that we have debated removing them from existence. We've debated intentionally extincting them because they're that dangerous, which what else have we, I don't think, is there anything else we've talked about? Like, let's wipe that off the face of the planet, that insect?
No, but no. Like, if I was a mosquito, I'd be pretty freaked out about that. Honestly, like, listen, we've had our fun tormenting these people, but like, did you see what they did to pandas? And they love pandas. They're wild about pandas, and they almost wiped them out accidentally.
Mosquitoes seem harder to get at. We have talked about...
There's probably more mosquitoes than pandas, if I had to guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am not an entomologist, but absolutely. That we have talked about ways to introduce, like, knockout genes, making them sterile, basically, introducing those mosquitoes, genetically engineered mosquitoes that will then breed with other mosquitoes that will then become infertile and then...
Yep.
Well, we will eventually have no more mosquitoes. We've also talked about infecting them with a bacteria called Wolbachia. This automatically infects mosquitoes. Yes. Like they already, some of them already carry this bacteria. Yes. It can live within them and it actually does not allow viruses to replicate inside them. So we could infect them with that little secret bacteria.
I feel like if we wipe them out, maybe that's it. Maybe we win.
We win.
Maybe that's it. That was the whole point. It's been us versus them the whole time.
There are people whose job it is to study to see if we wipe out all the mosquitoes, will we be okay? Is that cool? That's their question. If you wipe out all the mosquitoes, is that cool?
Is that all right?
Is that all right? Like, what will that do to the, you know, food web and all of human existence? Anyway, so mosquitoes are in a class of their own. So let's talk about some of the other big bad bugs.
Big bad beetleborgs. They're number two.
There is a beetle on here.
Okay.
Not this. This is an assassin bug.
Ooh.
What I like is that, I had to untangle this because when I was looking through various lists of like the big offenders, some of these I knew from our show, but then I wanted, you know, entomologists to weigh in on this. Right. What are the scariest bugs? And I kept seeing assassin bug, which is an alias of sorts. That's like a scary name. And so you need it needs to be undercover and not be so scary to get away with all of its tricks. Mm-hmm. So this is what I'm talking about is usually called the kissing bug.
But sometimes it's the assassin bug.
The assassin bug can be used for members of the Reduvidae family of bugs. Or Reduvid bugs. I've also heard them called the Reduvid bugs from that. And most assassin bugs in this family kill other bugs.
Okay.
So they assassinate other bugs, which we humans care less about, I'm learning.
Yeah, no problem.
But there is one that is the cone-nosed bug in this family, also called the triatomine bug.
The triatomine.
And anyway, this is the kissing bug. I'm going to call it the kissing bug. And that sounds it's so cute. It's the kissing bug. It's not cute. It's in the southern U.S. It's in Mexico. It's in Central America, South America. It is not at all harmless because it carries a parasite. Again, most bugs' danger to us is through the infections they carry.
They can't eat us unless there's a lot of them.
They could.
Yeah, but they need a lot of time.
There's a lot more of them than us. They carry the parasite, or they can, Trypanosoma cruzi, which causes Chagas disease. We've done an episode on this before. Chagas disease is a very serious disease. It causes chronic illness for thousands of people, around 10,000 deaths a year. It causes some severe heart issues. It can lead to heart failure and death. The way the parasite is spread from the bug is particular. I think this adds insult to injury. When you think about how you get something from a mosquito, it's sucking your blood. And while it's in there, it's leaving behind, the malaria parasite or whatever, right? That's how you think about getting something from a mosquito. When it comes to the kissing bug, the way that it spreads the parasite is that it poops on you. And then that poop gets sort of ground into the wound that it's created because it's also biting you. And so then you rub the poop into the wound.
Great.
Or it gets absorbed through your mouth or nose.
Oh, great.
The poop.
Great.
And the poop has the parasite.
Great. So this is your non-traumatizing episode.
Was that traumatized?
No.
Anyway, there are a lot of efforts. With a lot of these that we're going to talk about, we're getting into the realm, not malaria, but some of these other illnesses, of what we call neglected tropical diseases. Mm-hmm. And these cause a lot of either morbidity, meaning a lot of illness, or, you know, people who are unable to carry out their activities of daily living as a result, or mortality, meaning they kill people.
Right.
And we don't have enough research or efforts to eradicate them or to treat them more effectively or to get to the root causes, you know. And there are a lot of efforts being made to construct houses and things that are not as likely to have the kissing bug nesting in the roofs.
We're making it unpleasant for them to hang around.
Yeah, try to keep the bugs away is the main thing. It's kind of like with mosquitoes, standing water is a big risk. You don't want places with standing water because that's where mosquitoes lay their eggs and breed malaria, you know.
We got to make it less than ideal to for them to inhabit.
We're going to talk about another culprit that carries a similar parasite.
Okay.
This is another form of trypanosomiasis. This is this category of parasites. But this is a different bug.
The way you can say that is so cool. I would never say that with such confidence. You're amazing.
There are plenty of things I say on the show with less confidence.
Okay.
So I won't ever brag about that. The tsetse fly.
Ah.
Which I just said the fly. I didn't know this. Tsetse literally translates in Tswana, one of the Bantu languages that is spoken in Southern Africa, literally translates to fly. So when I say the tsetse fly, I'm saying the fly.
I did not know that.
Yeah. That's so I don't really need to say that. I could say the tsetse.
And then that would be enough. We would
that
is
that. A specific kind of fly.
Huh. Well, that look at
you
that.
You can say the fly.
If you want.
That is a pleonasm.
Pleonasm.
I learned this word.
Okay.
That's when it's a repetitive phrase.
Okay.
Did you know that?
No.
There, I just, that has nothing
pleonasm
to do with science.
Pleonasm is what is a repetitive
it's
phrase.
It's like saying tsetse fly.
Oh.
Say, you're saying
or
fly.
Or like, what's a good example of that?
I always use the example when people say Mount Fujiyama instead of Mount Fuji or Fujiyama.
Or ATM machine.
Yes. Yeah. That is a good example. And there are other, like, it doesn't have to be something where it's an abbreviation or a language issue. It can also be like you just said the same word twice, but different. You said synonyms.
Okay.
We do that. I mean, like, you find that in your, sometimes you'll write something and you'll be like, why did I put both of those? I don't need to.
Like if you said something is totally unique.
Yes. There you go. Anyway, the tsetse can carry a different kind of trypanosome, brucei, and this is the parasite that causes sleeping sickness.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's too bad because brucei, that's a fun name. That one feels a little bit more avuncular to me.
We've done an episode on this before. It is almost certainly referencing a guy.
Named Bruce.
But that's not fair. It could be last name, so it could be any gender. Okay. We can't assume a guy. But somebody with the name Bruce, almost certainly referencing a Bruce.
Actually, if someone female presenting went by the name Bruce, I would think that's pretty cool too, honestly.
That would be. Well, it could be a last name, is my point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it could be anybody. I don't want to assume anything. But yes, it is probably someone's name. This is a very severe illness. It can start with some relatively common symptoms, but then sleeping sickness can progress if untreated to severe neurological disease. And if it isn't treated, it is pretty much 100% fatal.
Wow.
It's a very severe disease. It's important to catch it early because a lot of the treatments that we have for early disease are more effective and also less toxic. This is one of the big, again, when you get to illnesses like this that, I mean, it's inequitable. We don't spend as much time and money and research dollars on illnesses that don't affect people who are the wealthiest and, you know, who are in the majority. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, there's not enough research into treatments for late stage disease. And a lot of the treatments are pretty toxic and can also cause death. So it's important to catch it early.
How did we settle on sleeping sickness, do you think, for this? Because I would say dying sickness is probably a more accurate term,
well,
it sounds like.
And it's interesting, too, because certainly anything that's going to cause, like, this kind of systemic response, inflammation, like fevers and chills and headaches and all those kinds of things, tends to make you feel fatigued and wear you out. So, like, the sleeping – but with the neurological symptoms, it actually can, in the later stages, lead to this, like, inability to sleep, like this constant irritability, wakefulness thing. So it doesn't necessarily always cause – but, yes, when I think sleeping sickness, we're using this euphemistically.
Okay, got it.
Yes. So the tsetse, that's another big culprit in the bug world. One more that I want to talk about before we take a pause is the black fly. It's from the Simulium family of flies. There are some things that you just learn in medicine as like a collection. And like in my head, I have a visual because I do not have aphantasia. I can visualize things in my head. I have a swift moving river with a black fly flying around it. And then someone losing their vision. That's like in a little composite in my head, because I was taught that in medical school that black flies They reproduce around swift-moving water sources,
okay,
like rivers. And they bite you. And if they bite you, that, well, that hurts. Mm-hmm. And then they might transmit a parasite to you. And Onchocerca volvulus is this parasite. It causes onchocerciasis, which is the second biggest cause of infectious blindness in the world, because this little worm can just crawl all over your body, including to your eyes.
I would imagine...
That's called river blindness.
I would imagine Alanis Morissette with two glasses of Chardonnay, each with a black fly in it, and she's handing one to Rivers Cuomo and one to Taylor Swift. And then I can remember Swift, Rivers, Black Fly. That's how I remember.
How do you remember that it carries the worm Onchocerca that can cause blindness?
Well, what I would do is I would put a me in the it too, and I would say, wow, this seems pretty wild. Just remember that you're remembering this because of the parasitic nematode Onchocerca volvulus. So I would be in there too.
You'd be in there too. I don't know that we should have you creating medical mnemonics anytime soon.
It doesn't seem that way. No, it doesn't seem like my strong suit.
All right, Justin, we're only four in. We've got six more to go and some honorable mentions. So before we do that, let's take a quick break and go to the billing department.
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth.
So there's a lot of stuff that medical TV shows can get wrong, but I know one of the most disappointing things for me when I started practicing is how uncomfortable conventional scrubs can be. They don't necessarily fit all body shapes really well, and they're scratchy. And that's until I found Figs. So our shifts in the hospital can be really long or in the office, and you need scrubs that feel good, that fit you well, and they're going to last all day long. Figs make scrubs for the medical professionals of today. They're not like a paper bag. They're not itchy. They feel great. They're so soft and comfortable. They're form-fitting. They're made for the kind of work that we actually do, where we're up and down, we're on our feet. Sometimes I'm sitting on the exam room floor checking out somebody's toenails, and I need to be comfortable while I'm doing it. They're antimicrobial, so you know that you're going to be protected. You can wash them every time you wear them, which is super important. I wash my scrubs, obviously, every day that I wear them. And they look good, so you can look like those cute TV docs and nurses that made us go into medicine in the first place. You can check out tops like the Katarina and the Cade pants. It's an easy, relaxed fit, and then so many cargo pockets, which I can tell you that's the main thing we need, are pockets for our pens, pockets for our notebooks, pockets for my Narcan, pockets for everything. I love Figs. They are so comfortable. And with the work that I do, kind of unconventional out in the street medicine, I need something that feels good all day long. With back to school season upon us, it's the perfect time to stock up with some fresh outfits for the year. And Figs just dropped a brand new collection of limited edition styles and accessories. If you're in healthcare or if you're shopping for someone who is, you can get 15% off your first order at wearfigs.com with the code FIGSRX. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX, FIGSRX.
I have really enjoyed experimenting with fashion, thanks to Quince. Now, I know that sounds wild coming from me, Justin McElroy, a podcaster. Why, Justin, are you even wearing clothes? I hear you. But when I want to try a new look, what I love about Quince is they have a lot of different clothing items that are at a great price and are really well made. So if you want to try something, you're not sure if it's like, is this going to be the right fit for me? I don't know. Try it out with Quince. There's craftsmanship that you see in every detail of these clothes. I've bought several, like a pair of shorts I love, a pair of pants I wear literally every day. I mean, nearly every day, not literally every day. You know what I mean? Because there's some days you're just like, you can't. But I've been so happy with the pieces that we have gotten from Quince. And also there's a really wide variety of stuff. You know, there's silk tops, skirts for dressing up, denim for everyday wear. I don't mention a lot of the specific items because honestly, you shouldn't trust me about that part of it if it's outside my specific range of clothes for my body. But I will say this, for my body, Quince does right. It sounds weird now that I say it like that. Find gifts so good you'll want to keep them with Quince. Go to quince.com/sawbones for free shipping on your order. 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/sawbones to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com. BetterHelp.com/sawbones.
Back for another game.
You know it.
What's going on?
Just one more week till Max Fun Drive.
Hard to believe. It's been a heck of a year since the last one. We're now a worker-owned co-op. We raised $50,000 for charity last year.
And we've added a bunch of awesome new shows. But do you think we're ready to do it again?
Absolutely. Lovely new gifts are lined up. The episodes will be amazing. And wait till everyone hears the bonus content.
Yeah, plus they know to go to MaximumFun.org/newsletter, so they're getting all the news. Oh, like that meetup day is on Thursday, March 21st.
Then what's bothering you?
Me? Oh, nothing. We're all set for Max Fun Drive to start on Monday, March 18th. I just didn't want you to see this coming. Check.
What? Hang on!
Most of the plants humans eat are technically grass.
Most of the asphalt we drive on is almost a liquid.
The formula of WD-40 is San Diego's greatest secret.
Zippers were invented by a Swedish immigrant love story.
On the podcast Secretly Incredibly Fascinating, we explore this type of amazing stuff.
Stuff about ordinary topics like cabbage and batteries and socks.
Topics you'd never expect to be the title of the podcast. Secretly Incredibly Fascinating.
Find us by searching for the word secretly in your podcast app.
And at MaximumFun.org.
All right, Sid, who's next? I wiped out all the mosquitoes during the commercial break. And
oh,
now
thanks.
I got to know who to knock out next.
Let's see what happens to all living things on Earth now. So this one was one that, as I was looking up different lists of like, by the way, if you Google what bugs kill the most people, like, does that put you on a list?
Maybe. It does seem to be. Why, Sydney? Why do you need to know this information?
It doesn't feel like something that a real human in real life would do to like murder other people, but it does feel like a Batman villain.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, locusts kept cropping up and I was thinking, why locusts? What are they transmitting? Are they biting people? What are the locusts do? I mean, like, I know some people get freaked out by them.
But
they can be loud.
You're right.
I collected many a locust shell in my youth. But it is because it's an indirect reason. Locusts can be responsible for a lot of famine. And have been at times where they're one of the years where the crop
destruction.
Yeah, exactly. If they swarm in large amounts in an area, they can completely devastate crops. I mean, completely. And they can lead to a lot of famine in those areas. So I feel like locusts belong on our list indirectly.
Mm.
Maybe.
So are they on the list?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, no, I'm putting them on the list.
One of the honorable mentions.
No. I'll get to those at the end. But I believe that they deserve a mention.
Okay.
The next one probably could be a whole episode of Sawbones that we haven't done. We have never talked about blister beetles.
Never?
Not that I can remember. Have we ever talked about blister beetles?
Gosh, Sid, you know, I don't know. I don't know if we did talk about blister beetles. No, it doesn't. Maybe I don't know what blister beetles are. I'm sorry. I was just pretending.
Have you heard of Spanish fly?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've heard of something related to blister beetles.
Okay.
Or cantharidin. Cantharidin is what I always said, but it doesn't look like it should be pronounced that way because there's an A in there. But cantharidin is a compound that is secreted by a type of beetle that we call the blister beetle. And it has a long history of being connected with humans, both good and bad.
Oh, yeah?
So first of all, it is secreted by the male blister beetle. And the way this is worded is I was reading descriptions of like what is its function. I found numerous articles where it is called a gift.
A gift?
As a gift to the female, which I guess I understand what is happening, but the word gift here feels so weird. I don't know. I do this too, though. Like, I put these narratives on top of the weird science stuff that I like. So whoever decided it was a gift. I understand you.
It's a gift.
We are alike. They give this as a gift to the female blister beetle to put on her eggs to protect them because it is a toxic substance and it will kill things.
Okay.
So if you put it on the eggs won't be attacked by, they won't be eaten by other bugs.
But as a side effect, it's bad for us.
It will also severely damage our skin. So it's a blistering agent. That's why they're called blister beetles. If you touch this substance that is inside these blister beetles, which, by the way, even after the beetle is dead, it can like be stable for a very long time. So like if you crush a dead beetle and it's in there, it can like burn, cause chemical burns on your skin, basically. It can kill you if ingested. Now, there are not a lot of cases, to be fair. If we're talking like sheer number, there aren't a lot of cases of humans eating this.
Okay.
Right? And it would only take 10 milligrams, by the way, that to kill you.
Oh, wow. Sheesh.
Yeah. That would be a fatal dose of cantharidin. So, but I think it's interesting because it does, first of all, it is more responsible for the deaths of animals, like horses specifically, because these beetles can live in hay. And if they get like crushed up in there and the horses eat the hay.
Horses consume them, yeah.
Yeah, and especially since even dead beetles can still carry the, you know, stable compound that can be fatal. So they do have, like, they do kill things pretty regularly. They don't kill humans as much, but it will hurt your skin. We have used them both as a blistering agent intentionally. And, you know, we've talked about that in a lot of, like, older, like, folk medicine traditions. And then it used to be the mainstay in, like, what common medicine traditions to, like, if you had something, if you had a fever, we would try to, like, blister your skin. Or if you had a wound, we would try to irritate it somehow to, like, cause it to get red and swollen and maybe even stimulate infection, right? We used to make things secrete pus. Yes, because we thought that was part of the healing process.
Right.
And so it was used intentionally as a blistering agent at times. It is also, has now more recently been approved for use to treat things like molluscum contagiosum.
Molluscum contagiosum?
Molluscum, which is this illness
that sound like a spell.
Mainly kids get. They cause these little, like, bumps, like, you can look up a little picture of the small bump.
Treat yourself.
That it can cause. They can be used to like remove those or like warts. You could use certain like preparations of this. Obviously, you don't want to squeeze it out of a dead beetle and put it on a wart. You'll just burn your skin and that would be very bad.
Right.
But there are like formulated preparations using this. It also is what is contained in the supposed aphrodisiac, Spanish fly.
All right.
Which is not, to my knowledge, Spanish or a fly. It is a blister beetle compound.
Okay.
Our next big bad bug is a little bad bug. Very little.
You can't keep saying big bad and not giving me Beetleborgs, Sydney. If the big bad Beetleborgs aren't on the list, I think you owe it to me and the listeners to just say that. Like, I don't know why you're dancing
around. The Beetleborgs are not on this list.
Okay. Thank you. Was that so hard? Sheesh.
I want to talk about fleas.
Oh, okay. Now chili peppers I can get into. Now I'm back. I'm back.
I feel our cats are in the room staring at me, and I feel like when I said fleas, they looked at me like, why you got to bring that into
why
it?
Right now?
I don't have those. Will you treat us for those? You gave Olive her flea medicine, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Every month.
I saw the alert on, yeah. So
this
fleas.
This is a weird time to do that.
Well, it made me think of it. Fleas can carry, one thing that fleas can carry, which is less important, is typhus.
A base.
The Siphonoptera.
Yeah.
Of the fleas. They like to carry, or they like to feed on all kinds of animals, and they spread germs around when they feed on animals. Typhus is one of them, but that's not the worst kind of typhus that fleas spread. So we're going to get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Typhus. We're going to talk about plague.
Aww.
Fleas spread the plague.
You
know, it's interesting because, like, obviously mosquitoes still continue to be the big threat.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, fleas really had a heyday there.
Fleas had their moment, huh?
Like, fleas did some damage because plague caused more than 50 million deaths. Like, famously devastated Europe.
They're the worst.
Yeah, I mean,
you know
there
what
are
it
books
is?
And poems and plays and songs written about plague.
It's because they can't fly.
You think that's why?
I think that's it. I think it's because they can't fly, and mosquitoes are cooler because of that.
I think fleas don't seem very scary. And, I mean, I will say the other thing is fleas are not as scary anymore because we can treat plague with antibiotics.
Right.
Right? Which, I mean, I don't know. We also can, of course, treat malaria. I don't mean to say we can't treat malaria, but plague is not the big danger it once was. You don't see plague very much, right?
I mean, who knows the way things are going?
I don't know. We're trying to forget about vaccines in West Virginia. Not that we vaccinate against plague, but who knows what we'll bring back. Maybe plague someday. It really saw its heyday back in the 1300s. But basically what happens, the flea bites a rat. It gets Yersinia pestis, which is plague.
Right.
It lives in the rat. The flea carries it. It bites the human. The human gets plague.
Gotcha.
We can treat that now. We couldn't back then. Like I said, typhus is also carried by fleas, but the kind of typhus that is carried by the flea is not as dangerous as the kind of typhus that is carried by another bug. The body louse.
The body louse. Oh, lice?
Lice.
Is that
well,
lice?
This is Pediculus humanus, which is the body louse, as opposed to Pediculus capitis, which is the head louse.
Of course, yeah.
The body louse. Yeah. I mean, most of us have not been exposed to the body louse. Some people have, certainly. You may have been exposed to the head louse. That is a pain in the butt to get rid of.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. But the body louse carries epidemic typhus. This is the typhus that has really caused a lot of illness and death, especially in times of like war and displacement. Like you think about like people in trenches or in refugee camps, people who are not able to like routinely access, showers and washing services, clean water,
yeah.
And so like these lice can live on your body and your clothing in a way in those sorts of, horrible situations that they wouldn't if you are able to wash your clothes on a regular basis and
right.
take a shower whenever you need to and that kind of thing. And so that form of typhus has definitely caused a lot of impact on humanity and is carried by the very, very small body louse.
Good to know. See, yes. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Our next mention. Now, here's what I like about this one. Well, not much. Actually, I don't like anything about this one. But while it has not done the kind of damage, certainly, that the mosquito has in terms of sheer numbers,
right?
I would propose that it is more creative.
Okay.
There's a lot more variety.
Okay.
And the timelines and illnesses can be confusing.
Ooh.
So they're tricksy.
Yeah.
Those are the ticks.
Oh.
Ticks can carry a lot of stuff, right? Like they're working. They're working overtime.
They're packing. They're packing heat.
Like mosquitoes have malaria. They just do well. They do lots of things, but they do that one thing that makes them at the top of the list always. Ticks are like, we have Lyme disease. We have ehrlichiosis. We have babesiosis. We have anaplasmosis. We have Rocky Mountain spotted fever.
We're also like hugely unpleasant. At least the mosquito has the dignity, the restraint to top off, to fill up, and then head out.
Ticks just sit
ticks
there
just stay
and gorged.
If you've ever taken a tick out of your own head and you thought it was a chunk of marshmallow because you just went camping and then you pull it out, that will stick with you. I'm not a fan of ticks.
I agree that ticks are creepier and grosser in that way. I also think if you see a mosquito flying by, there's an elegance to a mosquito. You don't think that?
No, I've
ticks
never
have no elegance.
Ticks don't have any elegance. That's true, Sydney.
And the little teeny ones, with their little legs wiggling. Ugh. I hate ticks. Anyway, and I think like the best example, and we've talked about it on the show before, but like all of these illnesses, which, by the way, can be very hard to diagnose. They have confusing like time courses. So like the symptoms change throughout the time that, from the moment you're actually infected to mm-hmm. later on. And so depending on when you catch those symptoms, they're going to look different. So the time course and presentation can be, so they can be really hard to diagnose.
They're slippery.
And I mean, I think like when you get to Lyme disease, there's so much misinformation that also surrounds
right.
some of these illnesses. There is no entity called chronic Lyme disease. That is not a thing. Year-long courses of antibiotics are in no way ever necessary, for this entity that does not exist called chronic Lyme disease. So with all of that, ticks have really thrown humans for a loop.
Mm-hmm.
And then you consider that they have alpha-gal, which we recently did an episode on.
Makes you allergic to red meat.
But I mean, think about that. You get bitten by a tick,
mm-hmm.
and you don't think anything of it, and you don't get a rash or anything, so you think, like, I dodged all that other stuff that everyone sort of understands.
Right.
And then you eat a hamburger and you get sick.
Unbelievable. You can't even comfort yourself with a delicious hamburger.
Stealth, creativity, diversity.
It's an inspiring bad guy.
Yes. So I want to propose a tie for the last couple that I'm going to talk about. We haven't talked about wasps or bees or hornets because, I mean, it's a little
bad.
More. Well, it sucks to get stung. And yeah. Certainly, like, have you seen My Girl? I think they've traumatized a generation.
Yeah, we're all always skittish about blackberry patches because who knows what bees may lurk.
We all saw what happened to Macaulay Culkin and it, like, scarred us for life. So,
us.
So bees have done some damage in that sense. There. There's a few others. There's the assassin caterpillar.
Okay.
Which,
Not quite as scary, I will say.
It isn't. It's so the moth that it turns into is not dangerous, but the caterpillar itself, the Lonomia obliqua, which is native to South America, it has these little spines on them that can deliver a small amount of venom. And while a little bit is not going to kill you, it interrupts your blood's ability to clot. That's how it harms you. If you were stung by enough, it could harm you. And they like to chill together, so you could get stung by a lot if you like stumbled into a bunch of these caterpillars.
That's great, Sid.
So I think that's kind of scary. There's the monarch butterfly.
What?
Now, okay. I can't imagine that people eat monarch butterflies very often, but if you did, it could make your heart stop.
Okay.
Well, I imagine you'd have to eat more than one, but maybe just one. The reason is that monarchs exist almost entirely on milkweed, and milkweed contains substances that affect the way your heart beats, these glucosidic substances called carotenoids. Anyway, the point is, don't eat monarch butterflies.
Kids.
So I guess it's like an honorable mention then in that sense. The one thing I will say at the end of all this, all of our relationship with insects is not antagonistic, right?
Right.
Like, we have had good bugs.
Good bugs and bad bugs.
We've had, and I kind of like mentioned people. That with the blister beetle, you can use cantharidin to treat molluscum and to treat warts. So, like, it's not all bad. And in that sense, I'd like to mention the humble maggot.
Oh, yeah. We love the maggot. What?
Okay, so maggots, we have observed for years that if a wound, and a lot of this came from like battlefield wounds where people might be like wrapped up quickly and then transported somewhere and there might be a long period of time before it's unwrapped and looked at and tended to again because of, you know, war and all that. Military surgeons observe that the wounds that got infested with maggots, those patients tended to fare better than the wounds that weren't infested with maggots.
They eat the diseased tissue?
Exactly. And up until the 1930s, we routinely used maggot therapy to treat wounds. Put some maggots in there. They eat all the dead tissue, leave the healthy tissue behind, the wound heals.
Okay.
We used to do that. What happened in the late 1930s and into the early 1940s?
Antibiotics.
And so we stopped using maggots so much because, I mean, you can kind of understand
that. That was right. I'm so glad that was right. I said it with such confidence. God.
I was really proud of you.
That was harrowing.
I was really impressed. Yay. You're right. Antibiotics came along. We stopped using maggots so much. But what did we do? Dumb doctors like me, we overused antibiotics.
Oh, no.
And then we rose resistance to those antibiotics. And so in the 80s, we started reconsidering, maybe we bring back the maggots. And so now there are ways that we can use maggot therapy in certain wounds, chronic wounds that we're having difficulty healing. It's a special dressing. So they, which I like this, I found this description, it prevents them from leaving the wound unescorted.
Gross.
If the maggots are going to leave the wound, you want to be escorting them out of the wound. You don't want them to leave on their own. So, and of course, there's specific kinds of maggots. We breed them. We make sure that they're not carrying any sorts of diseases. There's a certain strain that we use in the U.S., the LB01 strain of Phoenicia lucilia sirocada.
All right.
And they're applied to the wound at a dose of 5 to 10 larvae per square centimeter of wound surface. And they're left there for 48 to 72 hours. And they're removed.
How, Sid?
When the maggots are satiated.
Oh, boy. We love that.
Maggots are our friends. They can, but please do not use maggot therapy without the supervision of a physician or medical professional who knows how to use maggot therapy. Any old maggot won't do the trick. Please don't go find maggots and put them in your wounds. There are maggots who eat living tissue, and those would do harm. And you don't know. I don't know. None of us know the difference. Well, some of us know.
Special maggots.
They're special maggots. You got to get the medical maggots. Prescription maggots only, please. Please don't go.
They are professionals, okay? You want maggots that have some restraint. They're not going to leave a big mess. They're not going to leave their cigarette butts everywhere. You want
These are maggots that went to medical school. They've got their little white coats. They've got their their red books in their pockets, and they're ready to do work.
Yeah.
You want the right maggot. So please don't go freestyle this and try to put maggots in a wound on your own. Please don't. That would be bad. Don't do that.
thank you so much to Maggots. And thank you for listening so much. And thanks again to the Eastern Branch of the Entomological Society of America for having us as their guests. We always love to come talk to some people where they are, especially talking to other science folks from different disciplines. It's always fun. So we're really appreciative of them. Thank you. And thanks to the taxpayers for the use of their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. And thanks to you for listening. You're the best. That's going to do it for us. Until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported directly by you.